Welcome to the Play in Faith podcast, where we dive into the world of sports through the lens of optimism, inspiration, and faith. We're on a mission to infuse youth sports culture with positivity and joy while building the largest network of college Christian athlete mentors in the world. Thanks for stopping by. Enjoy today's show.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It is Coach Chris from the Play in Faith podcast. I am excited today. We have a new member of the Wawasee Boys basketball coaching staff and a former player at IPFW. We've got Mr. Keaton Dukes on the air today. We're going to have some fun. So, Keaton, how's everything going, man?
I'm doing good. I'm excited to be here, and let's get it going.
All right. Well, thank you for stopping by. So it's been an interesting summer for you. So you are almost fresh out of college, right? I mean, it hasn't been long at all. I know you
about 2 weeks now.
As I say, I know you coached briefly on a high school staff last year while you were still finishing up school, but now you have come home. You are officially on the coaching staff at Wawasee High School, your alma mater. So tell me a little bit, how'd you end up back home at Wawasee?
Yeah, so I was at Manchester, like you mentioned, last year while I was finishing up. I was doing my school online, so it wasn't like I was, you know, super stretched doing that. And then the coach left, and O'Connell called me, and it was a no-brainer, really. As he was my assistant when I played in high school, and great relationship with him. Scotty was there while I was in high school. I got a great relationship with him, basketball and out off the court. In life. And then I played with Cam, who is the JV coach. So it was really everybody was just new or familiar, and it was like going back home.
Yeah, they're probably excited. I forgot that Scotty was coaching when you were there because he took a little gap. So we have actually made fun of him on the air. So I interviewed his niece, and we were telling a story, kind of making fun of him on the air. And she said that he has never beaten her in a pool race, even though he has said that he has. So we'll leave Coach Beasley alone here today. I've given him a lot of grief on the air. I know he listens.
He needs to get made fun of a little bit.
So it's really cool to be able to come home. I mean, obviously, and some time has passed since you played, but not really. I mean, like a blink of an eye, but a lot has changed with Wawasee. So I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit here. So from an outside perspective, Nate takes over this year. He will be technically the fourth coach in 5 years since you played, because you played for John Everingham, correct?
Yep.
So Everingham is here. So you've had Everingham and you've had two coaches in between. And now here we are with Nate. So it seems like I'm going to say we, even though this is a national show, it's we. My kids are going to go to Wawasee. I coach there too for the girls' side. So it seems like we have finally got a stable group in play here. It feels like there's some stability now in the program. So what are some things that you and the coaching staff are doing to really kind of reestablish some culture at Wawasee? It's tough when it turns over every single year. So what are you guys doing to reestablish some of that culture over the summer and then hopefully into the season?
Well, our first thing was like, everybody's got to believe that we're here. Like, it's stable. Like you just mentioned, like, I'm not sure with the past, you know, a couple of years, anybody really thought that. And I mean, no disrespect to any of those guys. Nobody really knew or thought if those guys were going to be here for, you know, 5 years, 10 years, 3 years, nobody knew. So I think with Nate and Scotty and myself, people are, you know, understand it's like, okay, these guys care. They want to be here. They're not just going to be here for however long and then take a new job. So I think that's the first thing. And then the second thing is, you know, getting the kids to understand that too. Or you can flip those. Kids would be one, community would be two. But everybody's got to believe that, you know, we're here and we care. We want to see Wawasee basketball get back to a place where it's respected again by not only our community, but other surrounding communities.
Yeah, I love it. I think it's really important to establish some of that culture, to get community buy-in. You've only been out for 4 or 5 years, but man, IHSAA has changed a lot even since you were playing. I mean, the transfer portal is probably the right word. I mean, just with the freedom of movement for high school athletes, I've noticed it even at my young daughter's level, even at the fourth, fifth grade elite travel level, there's already chatter of, so where are you going to go to school? where are you going to go? What about this program? And it's like, well, you go to school where you live. What are we doing? But that is not the case right now. So I think that's really important for you guys, not just to keep our kids home, but also become more of a destination rather than an exporter. So have you had any conversations like that with some of the kids, like that, that are maybe hearing whispers and voices of other schools, or I mean, is it just business as usual?
A lot of it is business as usual.
Yeah.
I would say, really, unless you've got somebody who is all-star level, they're not getting pulled as much as somebody might think. But
Yeah.
you do have to make them feel wanted at their own school now, for lack of better words, for them to stay almost.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of it is bad example from, the college transfer portal and all that, and everybody thinks that, oh, every other place is better than here, when it's in reality, it's really not most of the 95% of the time.
Yeah, we've been talking about that too. Like the grass is always greener, but let's water it where our feet are standing right now and then get back to some basics here. So obviously you guys will have summer practice starting soon. So it's a transition year as well. So with what, three seniors graduating, or at least it's like at least three of our
Three
more
starters,
prominent
three,
players have moved on. So it's up for grabs this year, right? I mean, you've only got two returning starters, like really three kids that played like big time minutes returning. It's a wide open competition. So what's that vibe like as the guys arrive here in a week? Is there some of that hunger, or how are we kind of stoking some of that competition?
It's been good. We had so our spring workouts were a little bit more limited with, kids playing different sports and stuff like that. So
Yeah.
we didn't have a full team, but even in our spring workouts, there was good competition. The first week or so, we're introducing some new stuff a little slower. And then as we ramped up in the spring, they got the hang of it. Kids were looking good. And you can tell that they understand that there is roles to be filled, and they want, they're going to compete along their team. They're going to push their teammate, they're going to encourage their teammate, but they're trying to take the spot from him too, which is what, we're trying to manufacture, and that's what's going to, help us as we move forward into October, November as we get started.
Yeah, it makes for like a really fun off-season and training camp where, it's biblical too. Iron sharpens iron. Sometimes for better or worse, when you've got like an entire team returning, there is almost a sense of complacency. Well, it's my spot. I had it last year. The younger guys accept having to wait their turn. It should be a pretty competitive summer with a lot of guys getting after each other, right? Yeah, that'd be fun. So let's transition a little bit to obviously you just finished up college. And then now you're back home coaching at your alma mater. So you spent 3 years at PFW. So for people national who may not be as familiar with the program, it is a Division I program in the Summit League, correct? Or
Horizon.
Horizon, that's right. I can never remember. So you're playing at a D1 level. You chose to walk on there, and I think that's a unique experience. So tell me a little bit about that decision coming out of high school. Why you decided to go to PFW as a walk-on when maybe there were some other places where you could have played a little more, but it wouldn't have been at as high a level.
Yeah, so after we talked about this a little bit off there, but I
Yeah.
had a good junior year of high school. I had a really good start, kind of a middle of the season, and then finished really strong. So I was feeling good going into the summer of my senior year. I was like, okay, I'm about to, I have a legit chance to, full ride somewhere where I want to go. And I mean, I wasn't unrealistic. I knew I wasn't going to go to IU as a scholarship player, but
Sure, sure.
I thought there was a legit chance I could play low major D1, D somewhere like that, high level NAIA. Got hurt kind of going into my senior year. Had a bad senior year for what I wanted it to be. So I didn't have, 15 plus different NAIA D2 offers. I had a couple here and there, and I went on these visits, and I didn't love the school, and I didn't it just wasn't the right vibe or like feeling I was looking for,
Sure.
and I ultimately was just gonna stop playing. That was my decision at the moment, and late. It was really late, right around spring break. Coach Kaufman called me. Well, he actually friends with Scotty, and that's how I got into contact with him. Called Scotty and said they had a spot, and so we set that up. I went on a visit, and I loved it. And he knew I didn't want to play anymore. He's like, "Dude, just come on a visit, check it out. You might change your mind." Went on a visit, loved it, committed that day on the visit, and just went from there basically. So I went from not playing at all to Division One in one day.
So that's kind of wild, man. That's fantastic, and that should make some of our program kids feel pretty good. It's nice when you are in a high school program where you have some of those relationships with some of these coaches around here. To nothing's handed, everything is earned, but those connections and relationships at least open up some pathways and opportunities. So playing D1 basketball, very, very glamorous. The life of a walk-on, not always so glamorous, right? Like we think of it as, you see it on TV and the walk-on gets in and they hit the three and all the Cameron crazies go nuts or like Notre Dame Stadium erupts. But there is countless, countless, countless hours of work. You're working just as hard as those guys, but don't often get the payoff of getting to appear in a game or, and if you do, not always playing some of the meaningful minutes. So were there some times where he said, "You know what, man, I love to hoop. These are my buddies. But man, oh man, I'm putting in 20, 30, 40 hours a week here, and I'm not getting the glory side of it." Like, were there some moments like freshman year, sophomore year, where you're like, "Dude, I don't know if I want to do this."
There is definitely I mean, that's, I don't want to say always in your head, but that's, I mean, that's legit. And it's anybody who has been a walk-on or been in a similar situation in whatever in life would be lying to you if they said that, "Oh no, I love, like, everything was awesome and I didn't want to play at all." Like, you're not a competitor then, because obviously you want to play, you want to do that. I would say my freshman year was, just as far as the playing aspect, it was a little easier to accept because I knew, I like, if I was to start in a game, there's no way. Like, I was too small, didn't, not enough muscle, what, all this, not quick enough yet. So my freshman year, it was more of just like, I loved just going at the guys in practice because it was, I knew I was gonna get cooked 90% of the time, and it didn't, I didn't care because I knew I wasn't good enough yet and I was just trying to get
Yeah,
better.
and you're not that small, just
I would say
for the
as
people at home,
I
right? You're like 6'3".
yeah
Right, yeah, exactly.
yeah
Yeah, so
6'3", 6'4", but I mean, the guys I'm
D1
going
small,
to, six six
but not small.
220, yeah, right.
Yeah.
And then I would say, as kind of, you know, I got to my sophomore, junior, the main thing is, like, I just got smarter with the game. Like, obviously I got better skill wise and everything. But you get to a point where, like, I really understood kind of the concept of, you know, playing off of these guys who are really good. Like, I understand what our point guard, like, he was really good at. I'm playing my role. Like, all you need to do, or all I my role was, as far as, you know, scout team, practice team, everything like that, was I was a shooter. So
Yeah.
I wasn't trying to go out there and, you know, tween, finish at the rim, all that stuff. And it's like, we had some guys who were, you know, I didn't know their role. And I felt like,
Yeah.
as me understanding my role, it's like, well, he goes out there and tries to do that. I go out there and just let him do his thing, and then I'll get open and catch, shoot it. And it's like, so that was a little hard for me as I got older and understood the game more. But it was a great experience. I loved every minute
Yeah.
of it, every second of it. And I was very glad I made the decision to do that. And you know, like you said, the relationships are probably bigger than even the basketball side of it, being at the Division One level. And you know, I've got teammates who play in 10 different countries now overseas, and
It's wild.
Different coaches at different levels of college basketball, and just everything like that is really, and you spend so much time with those guys that it's a, you have a genuine relationship outside of basketball as well.
It'd be forever connected to the game, and just
Mm-hmm.
what a cool experience. And so, as you mentioned, I think there's something really valuable in understanding your role. I think that's very tough for young players, where even in like the elementary level, like the kids who score the points tend to get more attention. The kids who don't, sometimes there's some jealousy. And you look at like who are actually getting opportunities to go to the next level. It's not necessarily the kid who throws in 18 or 20. It's almost often people that are very good at certain things on teams that are very successful. Your coach was not looking for you to drop 20. He was
Right.
looking for you to space the floor, hit a corner three, be able to make some defensive plays, right? So understanding your role, that is so huge, and that's really hard for young athletes.
Yeah, it's, and I tell our guys that, or like anybody who I'm working with individually, team say, and anything at all, is like when they're working out, they're trying to do all this, crazy moves and all that stuff. I'm like, all you need to do is, no, I think it's a, I think it, let me back up saying, I think it is good for kids, especially in small towns like we are, or anything like that, where you are relied upon more for your school team or whatever the case may be, because
Sure.
I think that's a good experience to have and it makes you better as a player. But to get to that next level, like you're saying, it's like if you're gonna, you're not gonna be what you are now when you move up. You're gonna be a space to floor guy, defensive guy, like you said. All you have to do is play off a closeout and attack off a closeout. You either shoot it or
Right.
you attack. It's,
I
there's
know.
two options basically every time you touch the ball. So
Yeah.
you don't need to be working on step back off the ball screen threes. Like,
Right. Matter of fact, you probably are headed to the bench if you take that shot.
right.
Right? Like, I go, we don't really need you. So I find that like two things interesting with that. Like, one, my youngest daughter intuitively already gets this. Like, every time she wants to be at practice a half hour before we practice, and she wants to stay later, and it's always, Dad, close out and make me make a decision. Right. So for all of the fancy drills and the skills training and all the things that are out there, where she's really taken a huge leap is when she catches the ball, if there is a step and a half and my hand is down, she's ripping that jump shot. And from 18 and in, it is automatic. It stinks. I can't even shoot with her anymore. It's embarrassing. If I close out of control, she's reading my front foot, she's attacking, she's going. If I close out flat and I cut her off, she's spinning off or she's bumping and creating space. And for all of the fancy stuff that we see on Instagram and TikTok, if she can do those three things, she's going to be a really, really, really good high school basketball player. And who knows, right? So the other thing I've noticed is that knowing your role part, I don't even think it happens just in college. Like I've noticed with some of the high level travel ball, we have some kids that are just pounding the basketball, 10 dribbles, 12 dribbles, 14 dribbles. If you would have walked into a PFW practice, got the ball in the wing, and took 12 dribbles, would your coach have just directly sent you home?
Oh yeah, he would kick us out of the gym. Well, that was not our style of
Just insane. Yeah.
basketball at all. We would, I mean,
Yeah.
we were a pass, but like we were a ball moving team. And when
Right.
we, our defensive game plans, actually, we had a couple guys in our league who were very, very good. I mean, legit players, but very ball dominant point guards. And we always, we called them dribble dribble guys on our defensive scout. And because the way we played defense, it was just, I mean, we would force them into 6 to 10 turnovers a game because
Right.
just can't do that at a consistent level against a
Yeah.
defense of that level.
Unless you're like even the NBA has changed. You don't see the Russell Westbrook, the Carmelo Anthony, even like Kobe. I know you're a Kobe guy. The game has changed a ton, right? You watch like the Thunder Spurs series. Like, I don't know that I saw anyone take more than three dribbles in the actual front court. Maybe when we're playing the middle third, of course. But I mean, it's just not how the game is played. And I think that's really good that we're getting a lot more people training and teaching that way, to play in a team concept. So I know that's something that you're doing outside of just coaching in high school and being a college graduate and a real adult, having to have a job now.
Yeah,
Real world's a drag, man. Just
that's
stick with
true.
hoops as long as you can, brother.
Yeah.
The real world's a drag. So when you're doing some skill training, this is something you're doing privately. You're working with like high school and college kids, or I'm sorry, high school and elementary, middle school kids, or what age
Yeah,
group are you
so
working
we,
with right now?
yeah, I mean, obviously, I work with our guys on the team, and then everybody else kind of 8th grade-ish down. But yeah, more mostly just kind of the stuff you talked about with your daughter. I mean, decision making stuff, different reads off of, closeouts, whatever it might be, catching the ball. A lot of like technical footwork type stuff, because a lot of kids really struggle with footwork growing up. And then if you don't have footwork, you're in a bad spot once you get to high school and you've just played off talent your whole life.
That you see that a ton. You're dead on. Is that that's the biggest difference? Like fifth, sixth, seventh grade, you can still just out athlete somebody. And for most kids, that ends. There are some blessed folk. Like if you're 6'9", 220, like LeBron, you're gonna out athlete some folks. But for the most part, I mean, we're starting to see the difference when we get to our sixth, seventh graders, where some of them still need 4 or 5 steps, a half second to gather to get a shot off. The kids that are just coming shoulder to hip off a screen, boom, 1, 2, inside, outside, pull, are lighting it up. And but a lot of kids can't do that because no one's ever taught them that, right? They're just chucking up shots in the driveway. So when you're working with people, tell me a little bit about like what would a typical workout look like?
So we'll do, I kind of start all my workouts with, I go through like a touch series warm up kind of around the rim. And then I like to start with ball handling personally. It's just how I always structured my own workouts when I was working myself out growing up.
Love
So
it.
I'll do about 15, 10, 15 minutes of ball handling. It's not something that, you obviously know you don't need to do 30 minutes straight or 45 minutes straight of just ball handling, and there's just no point. I like to do 10 minutes of only ball handling, do some half court, full court stuff, moving, stationary, and then I'll get into kind of working, finishing around the basket type stuff, but incorporate more dribbling into it. So you're doing a dribble read or coming off of certain footwork into a floater or something like that. And then we'll do some different shooting out of different footwork depending on the situation, kind of what that player is going to typically see in their offensive scheme that they run, a
Are they
scoop,
like a
travel
corner left? Are
ball.
they a wing? Are they playing in a dunker spot? Yeah, sure.
Kind of stuff like that. And then I like to finish with, conditioning, shooting series of, two, three, four drills, depending on the skill level, stamina, everything, catered to that individual player.
Love it, man. So when you talk about ball handling, I think that's a place where training and practicing has evolved, right? I mean, nothing wrong. I meant you mentioned you do a little bit of stationary work. It used to be almost entirely stationary. We're training people, 10, 15, maybe 20 years ago. One of the things I noticed, and maybe not quite as prevalent in the men's game, but especially in the younger levels of the girls' game, the most underrated part to me is finding a kid who can play the middle third of the court. A lot of kids can come off a curl, catch and shoot, make a dribble move, get to the rim. But you're seeing girls' teams that can't compete because they don't even get to that point of the game because they can't play the middle third of the court. They can't get into the offense. So what are some things that you can do like ball? So when you're talking about movement, ball handling, like what are some drills or some things you're doing to help people get into their offense, right? Because that's where a lot of these middle school teams really struggle.
Yeah, so we do. I like to do a lot of kind of the when we start to work out, a lot of probably not necessarily stuff you would do in a game, but like real field drills with your hands, fingertips, where you're maybe moving a different way and you're just pounding the ball as hard as you can, as far as cross tween, whatever. And it probably looks stupid if you're just somebody's watching you just walking down the court doing that.
It's the
But I
fun
feel like it
stuff.
really helps as far as like your mind hand coordination with the ball. And then I like to break it down into two different things. There's movement. Your hand and the ball is connected with your feet, and then it's disconnected. So you need to be able to move while you're doing the, we'll do a pound tween and your feet are moving at the same time. And then you'll have to do a cross tween and you're not dribbling it every time your feet are moving. So it's finding that differential between your brain has to be able to still get the right footwork and still move, when the not when that ball isn't bouncing. Because sometimes kids get into a habit of ball foot, ball foot, ball foot, ball foot, and then it's just more robotic, and they don't know how to like just be free with the ball. And that's where you get a lot of not necessarily handle, because you don't need a crazy handle to be able to take care of the ball. You just got to be able to keep the ball protected and, play with a pace that is not the same speed the whole time. So we
Yeah,
have to play a lot of that.
That's so underrated, and like I know my kids prefer more the college game, and I think I prefer it visually as well. But even in the NBA, sometimes, like Wemby's fun. That's not who I want. Ant-Man's fun. That's not who I want my kid to watch. I want you to watch like Luka, dude plays with incredible pace. He's not blindingly athletic. You look at Jalen Brunson. You ever seen a kid play better off 2 feet than that guy? It's unbelievable, right? I mean, and small, like smaller than us, like not muscle aspect, but I think we got a couple inches on. And so I think that's really good as you're teaching and training these kids where, look, we want our kids to learn how to go behind the back with some speed step stuff, and we want them to be able to go through their legs. But a lot of times, you'll see them go behind the back and they have to move backwards to get the ball. I'm like, well, that's not the point. Where what would be more valuable is if they could keep it on a string, have their head up, see that double team coming, get that escape dribble, switch their feet, and create a passing angle. And those are the things that are really hard to replicate when you're just out here doing, behind the back and things like that, like how to get a feel. So do you ever do any kind of like small side training where you have multiple people in there, some of the decision making and things like that?
A lot of it if we have enough people. I like doing, 2-on-2, 3-on-3, defense disadvantage, offense
Love
disadvantage,
it.
whatever it might be. I like to play out of a closeout a lot if I'm doing that stuff, just because I just feel like that's most realistic to game situations. And I like to put a time restraint on it, whether it's 4 seconds, 5 seconds. I like that a little bit more than, I mean, there's nothing wrong with the three dribble limit, but I like the, time better, where it's like you got to make a decision quick, because you could hold the ball for 5 seconds and haven't taken a dribble and you're still at three dribbles doing that. So I like both, but I like doing the time limit. Makes them think a little bit more.
I think that's smart for like young coaches. We do like off-season workouts, and I had a lot of the really younger ones in the gym with us yesterday. And we'll put the time limit on the dribble limit because, a 2-on-1 advantage drill, by the time you've made six passes, I'll usually tell them, like, by the second pass, is it a 2-on-1? Right. And they're like, no. I'm like, what is it? I was like, it's a 5-on-5. Right. I mean, we've lost that advantage. So teaching them to play a little quicker and everything too. So we'll make sure we drop some notes into our podcast here and on our site. So if people are looking to get a little training in this summer, we'll make sure they can hit you up. So as we kind of transition back to college, so I know I had asked you and then my brain went down the training path here. So I know there was a few times where, you said, look, this is a lot of work. You're putting in a ton of work as a walk-on. As you put on strength and skill, by the time you are through your sophomore year, there probably are some other opportunities out there, like to go somewhere else. So did it cross your mind to say, man, it's really cool to say I'm a Division One player and I love these guys, but man, I kind of want to get out on the court. Is there a smaller D2 or NAIA program that I can go to? So did that ever become part of the thought process? Like, man, I'm ready to move on and play.
I mean, it's not something you think about during the season. I mean, during the season, you're like, I want to play, but you're not like, well, I'm gonna get out of here and go play at the end of the year. At the end of the year, you sit down, you're like, okay, I'm D1, but like, is it worth it? Do I want to play? What is the benefit? Like all that stuff. So my sophomore year, I really thought about it. Met with Coach Kaufman a bunch about it, and he understood where I was coming from. He was really supportive, and I was very appreciative of that. He said, basically, I don't want to make you stay if you want to go play, because I can't promise you you're going to play here. He's like, if you work all summer and you are in a spot where you can play, you'll play. But if you want to go somewhere, I'll help you go wherever you want to go to go play and do what's best for you. And I decided to ultimately come back after my sophomore year, which I thought, looking back, was a good decision. I'm glad I did that. And then after my junior year, I did decide to enter the transfer portal, and had opportunities and had a school where I was, thought I was going to end up with a former teammate of mine, and I really wanted to go there. And then it fell through at the end. And then after that, I knew I had 1 year left. I didn't redshirt at all at PFW, so I knew I only had 1 year, and I didn't want to be someplace that I wasn't 110% invested in, kind of. I wouldn't have said it was a wasted year, but I don't think I would have got what I wanted to get out of it if I wasn't fully invested into it. And I thought that wasn't fair for myself, wasn't fair for, a coach of that position, and they weren't getting, 110% of me and my effort. Not that I would have gave less effort, but if my heart just wasn't all the way in it.
That makes sense.
So I just decided to be done, and I had no regrets about that decision. So I know,
Good for
kind of
you.
looking back, I probably made the right decision. Obviously, I would have loved to play a year and have that experience of being, a real, not that I wasn't a real college basketball player, but
Oh, I
having
get
the
it.
game
A
experience
key
and everything
contributor
like
and
that.
getting some run and yeah.
But I didn't regret it, don't regret it, and I had a great experience in college. I loved it and kind of
And
got
you have your
it.
degree in hand,
And
and
I have a
now,
degree in hand, and I am completely done with school.
yeah. And I mean, I will tell you too. I mean, look, what are you? 23, 22,
0.2.
22, right? So you're starting your coaching career very, very, very young. Obviously, I hope you are at Wallasey for years, but I would imagine that with that playing background. With the coaching experience you're getting at a young age and all of your knowledge and the leadership skills are just going to grow and develop over the next few years too. That I have a funny feeling we're going to see you patrolling the sidelines somewhere down the road. Hopefully it's not one of our rivals,
No, hopefully not.
but no. So well, Keith, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time. It was great catching up with you. I'm excited for what you guys are doing at Wawasee and whether it's this year or whether it's several years down the road, I know we're building a program with some consistency, and I think that's going to be really, really valuable for the community. But thank you so much for your time. Folks, if you've got some young athletes in the kind of Syracuse, Warsaw, Goshen area, if you don't know what those cities are, then you probably aren't our target audience since we have a national reach. But if you are here, local, close to home, make sure you check out the show notes and hit Keaton up with a line and get in the gym and put in some work. And in the meantime, Keith, we're going to be praying for you. We're going to be praying for all the guys over at Wawasee. And thank you so much for stopping by and can't wait to see how your coaching career unfolds.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate you having me. God bless.
Thanks for tuning in to the Playing Faith Podcast. If you love what you heard, please take a moment to rate our show and share it with your friends and fellow athletes. Together, we can spread the joy and positivity that youth sports deserves. And be sure to visit PlayingFaith.com for more fantastic resources. We're on a mission to build a vibrant community of Christian athlete mentors that are not just a voice your athlete will listen to, but one they should. Until next time, keep playing in faith.